Hey everyone, welcome to A Must-Win Game with Maggie Gray. So excited to have Mark Stein, my new colleague, on the pod. Of course, he's an NBA insider. He's got his own Substack, which is must subscribe. It's must read. The All NBA Show on the All City Network, Sirius XM, and of course on Amazon Prime. We're going to talk about LeBron James's free agency. We're going to talk about the possible destinations. We're going to talk about Jaylen Brown and the trade that is still causing shockwaves around the NBA. A little Lakers talk as well, because Mark covered Luka Doncic so closely in Dallas. And then the top five players who are facing the most pressure going into next season. But first, Mark, thanks for joining us. Let's start with LeBron James. So who is pursuing LeBron most aggressively?
Within the chasing pack, the feel there is that Cleveland is the scenario to beat. But based on what we know, it's not just going to be basketball. It's not just looking at the field and saying, this is my best chance for ring number five. That does not seem to be the way they are approaching this. I think one of Rich's quotes was, it's happiness is the priority and it's a bucket of happiness. There's a bunch of things in the bucket. And I think that's why these other teams fear the Cavs the most, because the Cavs do have the storybook ending. The Cavs have the heartstrings ending that really nobody else can offer. And so you put that on top of the fact the Cavs are in the East. They've got a good team. The East is theoretically easier to get to the finals. I think that's why these other teams feel that way.
I was going to ask you, what do you think the percentage is on selling this to the public and LeBron keeping his legacy in good standing versus basketball?
Yeah, I'm hesitant to do that because then now I got to step into LeBron's head. But just as an observer who's been doing this a long time, and I've actually heard this from teams as well. I've heard this from teams that are interested, that would love for LeBron to choose them. What would it be like if he chooses the Sixers, or he chooses the Wolves, or even if he chooses the Warriors, the Nuggets? Like, if this proves to be his last season and he goes to Minnesota, and the Wolves make their lone regular season trip to Cleveland, that's going to be the farewell, that he's going to be in a Timberwolves uniform playing in Cleveland for the last time. I think that is hard for a lot of people to picture. But then you could also say, it's what LeBron wants. It doesn't matter how we see it on the outside. And look, I spoke to Rich Paul on Sunday, and I asked him for an update, and he just said, his words basically were, several teams make sense for a variety of, for a variety of reasons. I'm paraphrasing now, but he basically said several teams have appeal, but this is going to be what LeBron ultimately wants to do. And that's why it's so hard to do percentages, because this might surprise you. LeBron is not taking my calls and texts right now.
Well, that will change, I'm sure. But here's the question that I'm struggling with. Who's selling who? Because I saw the whiteboard that Rich Paul did on his podcast, and I thought it smelled a little desperate. I thought it reeked a little bit. If you know, to me, it felt a little like really putting your business out there in a way that we haven't seen since The Decision, which is one of LeBron's biggest gaffes that he's made PR-wise. So how much is this team selling themselves to LeBron, and how much is it LeBron having to go and pitch himself now as he goes into
LeBron is not going to pitch himself. I mean, I don't teams,
or Rich Paul
teams, LeBron. Teams don't even know to this point if they're going to get a chance to speak to LeBron. I know some of those teams would certainly like to, but all the messaging so far has been that Rich Paul, make all your pitches to Rich Paul and he will take all that intel and data back to LeBron. I guess I see it differently. Cut 2014. I covered so closely, and I was actually, I was still at ESPN then, and I was actually on the set July 11th, 2014. Jay Crawford was the host, Chris Broussard, Brian Windhorst, and me. We were on live TV when LeBron, through the Sports Illustrated essay, announced that he was going back to the Cavs. That was July 11th, and LeBron held up the whole league that summer. Nothing of significance could move in free agency until LeBron decided. This time, we're almost certainly going past July 11th, but it's different because 80%+, maybe 90% of the offseason business is done. Like, teams have the bulk of the moves and signings and trades are done. So, and also, LeBron's not going for cap space. It's not like teams that have hoarded Matt, you know, that have kept max salary slots aside to try to lure him. So he can take his time. And Rich is making a show of it, obviously. But is that so bad? Like,
yeah, it just made me wonder, like, where is like the resume for LeBron now? Is he like content company number one, basketball player number two? And I'm not even disparaging him. Like, I think, again, I always held him to a higher standard. I was on the flip side of that day. I was at Sports Illustrated that day, the day that Lee Jenkins and LeBron and that piece went up. And there have been two times in my career where I got pulled into a room and basically told, if you say anything, like, not only are you fired, we actually have a mechanism to blast you into the sun. And that was one day. And the other one was the Jason Collins when he came out. But those are two very important, obviously, for the magazine and the website, those 2 days. When Rich Paul says 27 teams, Mark, have either like checked in, or I believe that was the number. Do you believe that number? Do you think 27 teams in the NBA actually in some form or fashion checked in on LeBron?
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, is it embellished to some degree? I really don't know. But this, look, I have to say, this is a wider field of teams than I would have anticipated them considering what they're looking at right now. And look, to me, maybe the biggest surprise development in this, if we would have had this conversation a month ago and you were asking me to make these forecasts, it really seems like LeBron is more than open to going to the East. And I think a month ago, that would not have been what most insiders, and I don't mean by reporters, I mean people within the league would have projected. Because LeBron was a Laker for 8 seasons. It's the longest run he's had in any singular stretch of time. He's Cavs twice, Heat, none of those stints lasted 8 seasons. And Los Angeles has been his home. And to me, again, speaking purely as an observer and analyst, I thought that was one of the Warriors' advantages here, that the Warriors have players he loves, Stephen Curry, Draymond Green. Obviously, I mean, Draymond Green, he might be as close to as anyone in the league. A coach he respects and has already played for at the Olympics in Steve Kerr. And you can't commute in the strictest sense of the word from Los Angeles to Golden State, but you can sneak home a lot. The Warriors, I'm sure, would help him. Hey, game tonight, no practice tomorrow, just go back to LA. And like, I thought that was something that was really a feather in Golden State's cap. But look at the city. I mean, they're considering, you know, based on everything Rich Paul has said, Philly, Minnesota, and I believe Denver as well are getting serious consideration. And a month ago, I think many of us would have struggled to see those as realistic options.
Mark, it feels to me that if Steph wanted to play with LeBron, this would be done already. Maybe that's a bad read on it.
I think the Warriors want him. The Warriors definitely want him. But over the last week, and this is largely taking our cues from two Rich Paul podcasts and other interviews he's given, I mean, I don't know that the Warriors are still in that group of favorites with, you know, Cleveland, like I said, and I'm taking my, now back to reporting, I am taking my cues from the pursuing teams that I speak to who want LeBron James. And because Cleveland has both the storybook ending factor and a good team and the familiarity of a place he's played, and it is home. Like, the fact that we've seen a bunch of pictures of him hanging out with all his dear friends in Akron, he does that often. Like, I don't think you can point to that and just say that means everything. But the Cavs have a lot going for them. And if he is indeed willing to say, I know I've been in LA for the last 8 years, but I'm going to choose the scenario I like the best, no matter how far it is from LA, to me, that changed this whole thing significantly. And again, that's what it appears at this point. But, you know, ranking the teams, how soon we're going to get a decision. I mean, more people than not that I speak to do not expect a resolution this week. The feeling is that this is going to seep into summer league and will last at least until next week. And I think Rich Paul said on his latest podcast that he doesn't know. He doesn't know how long it's going to be. So, like I said, mid-July tends to be sleepy in the NBA once beyond summer league. All the transactional business is usually done, but, you know, not this year. We're going to have a saga to track.
Yeah, well, and we are certainly interested because he's still playing at such a high level. You know, it'd be one thing if it was just on name alone. We've seen guys hang on for years and years. Shaq changed teams 100 times at the end, you know, but it's because he actually is a difference maker. The one other thing about one of the Rich Paul podcasts was the talk about the Knicks. And he said that had the Knicks not won the title, LeBron would be there already. Okay, well, the Knicks did win the title. But Rich Paul also said Jalen Brunson would have to pick up the phone and call LeBron personally to basically tell him, I'm cool with it if you come here. Do you know if Jalen Brunson has any desire to do something like that?
I covered Jalen Brunson in Dallas, and my gut feel would be I could easily see Jalen making that call. He's all about winning. I think based on what has been said, the reticence would more be on the LeBron Rich side than the Knicks side. The Knicks just won their first title in 50 something years. If you could add LeBron James at a bargain price that helps you repeat, especially with the Knicks having all these concerns about going in the second apron, I can't, like I said, what I gather is there's more reticence on their side than the Knicks side. Imagining Jalen Brunson making that call is not hard to imagine.
You're so plugged in with the Mavs, obviously. You know, you covered Brunson when he was there, and I'm curious what their reaction was to the whiteboard when Dallas is up there plus Masai Ujiri, who's the new general manager, and it just says oil, golf, Macau, and Africa. Not a Cooper flag or Kyrie Irving in sight. Yeah. There, Mark. No basketball. Did they take that as a compliment? Were they a little offended by it?
Oh, I don't think they're offended by it. I mean, it definitely raised eyebrows in Dallas because, like, how do the players not get mentioned? But look, Masai Ujiri, since he's taken over, it's basically been 2 months now. You know, he's said repeatedly that everything we're doing is Cooper flag inspired. All our decisions will be future based. I mean, the Mavs would certainly have the financial flexibility. But since the whiteboard as well, I have not heard a single mention, really, a serious link between the Mavs and LeBron. And all the discussion has been about, you know, the six teams I mentioned. So now that we're going to summer league and more of that reaction will start to circulate, and like I said, if this thing consumes the next week plus, it will be a daily topic at Summer League. And look, another thing I've heard teams ask and wonder is, you know, LeBron has been known to drop in on Summer League for whatever reasons. Is this a Summer League where, because of the hoopla and the interest, that he's just going to stay miles and miles away from Summer League? Or might we see Rich Paul and LeBron James saunter into the gym? Oh, hey, there's Pat Riley and Spo. I'm going to go say hi to them. Like, is that a scene that we're about to get?
Well, he does everything, seems like, for max attention. So I imagine you're going to be seeing him. I would bet good money that you will. Because you covered Luka for so long, you cover the whole league. But again, Dallas, your backyard. How do you think Luka is now going to move forward with no LeBron on the Lakers? He's obviously the guy. We knew that, but this is no doubt his team. Knowing Luka as well as you do, how do you think he's going to respond from a leadership standpoint, being the guy for the Lakers standpoint?
Well, the Lakers have been telling him for a long time that this summer we're going to make major changes to the team. We're going to get you a top flight center. And Walker Kessler was a restricted free agent. And the way restricted free agency works in the NBA, if you want to swipe a restricted free agent away from a team, you have to overpay. And the Lakers paid a very steep price to get Walker Kessler. But they are of the belief that he's going to prove to be the best center who's ever played with Luka Doncic. We know Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves have formed a very strong partnership. So as a trio, they look like they have strong potential. And I imagine Luka is quite pleased to know that he has really the best center who was available to the Lakers. And again, there's no sugarcoating it. They paid a steep price to get him. And now they still need help on the wing, and they don't have the financial flexibility really to go out and get a defensive difference maker. There's still a chance that they end up finding a way to acquire Kuminga. They feel like Mamukelashvili and Quentin Grimes and Colin Sexton are going to boost the supporting cast in ways that last year's supporting cast didn't offer, but they know they need more, and they used pretty much all their flexibility to make sure they got Kessler and to be able to add these other guys. But I think Luka is, he and Reeves are tight, and he got his center. I mean, that's really what this comes down to.
You know, when he left Dallas, when he was traded out of Dallas, the rumblings were that he wasn't as committed, to his body and on the physical side. Like, do you think is he carrying any of that as a chip on his shoulder, or is that basically just dissolved?
Well, I mean, he's been a Laker. I mean, look, it's twofold. I mean, he'll be entering his second full season. But in Dallas, even after the miracle of May 12, 2025, when they won the rights to Cooper Flagg, even after that, the wounds are still there. And for a lot of fans, they're not going away anytime soon. So I think, no question, when the trade first happened, it was an absolute shock because it happened in the middle of the season with no warning. But he's had a lot of time now to get used to the fact that he is a Laker. It is, like you said, it is very much his team. And I think he's going to, he came in super motivated this past season. Injury doom struck late in the season for both he and Reeves. But I think he's going to come to this season really motivated. And, because again, Kessler was the player that the Lakers circled, and it didn't look clear how they were going to pull that off. You don't typically see restricted free agency resolutions that quickly. And we've seen two now, because Houston was able to come to terms with Tari Eason as well. We still have Jalen Duren in Detroit. We have Peyton Watson in Denver. How long are those going to take now that so much of the league's money league-wide has been spent? But, I mean, the Lakers, there's going to be a lot of attention on them too. I mean, that's also, they will be a huge curiosity when next season starts.
Obviously, the move that kind of sent the shockwaves through the NBA was Jaylen Brown getting moved. Not to mention Giannis, but Jaylen Brown for sure. Giannis had been coming for a while. Now we're getting reporting from Shams, and I'd be curious to kind of get your thoughts on it. Just the relationship between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Shams reported there was as little of a personal relationship as could possibly be. Is that what you were also hearing from your sources?
I mean, I got to say, I've been more focused on the Celtics' rationale, which we still don't have great answers for. Now, I will say this. The Celtics, on the first allowable day, Brad Stevens and Bill Chisholm, their new majority owner, they did a press conference. They sat there for 45 minutes. They took every question, which, was great. Again, to rewind to Dallas, the Mavericks traded Luka Doncic on a late Saturday night before the trade deadline with no warning. They were on the road in Cleveland. They did a press availability in Cleveland and the reporters who were traveling were there. But when you make a trade of that magnitude, you come back to town and you do a press conference in the city where you operate. And that didn't happen for months. And so the questions couldn't even be answered. Now, did Brad Stevens give us every answer we wanted? No. Like, we still don't have great clarity on why did the Celtics do this so fast? Why did they rush? They went all the way to the finish line of the Giannis sweepstakes, and then Jaylen Brown was traded so swiftly. Why didn't they wait longer? Was that Sixers offer going anywhere? Probably not. They could have gotten that at some other point. But the overriding factor you have when you look at it, and Brad Stevens has spoken to this, and you have to say there is merit to it. If you have so much of your financial flexibility invested in two players, it does make it difficult to build a team. And if they were going to only keep one, I think everyone knew it was always going to be Tatum rather than Brown. And that's from management and ownership. I mean, that's the direction they ultimately chose, and we all thought that's what they would do if they ever had to make that choice. But still, why this trade package? Is this really the best they could have done? Making this now, you make a trade that you're still going to have Paul George on your books for 2 more years. So you're not getting immediate financial flexibility. There are still a lot of puzzle pieces that we're looking for. And again, I said LeBron will be a constant topic in Vegas. I mean, so will this trade. This trade has a lot of people around the league scratching their head still.
Well, yeah, and Brad Stevens, he was almost apologetic, and well, he was very apologetic in his press conference. I thought it came across that way, kind of apologizing to the fan base, saying, "I know you don't care about salary. I know you don't care about second round picks. I know you don't care, but this stuff all matters to us." But every time they would go back to the money and not having money tied up in two players because it's 70% of the cap, he would almost like jump the reporter and say, "But I know Paul George is also making a ton of money." And it's like, does anyone in the world think Paul George is going to opt out after?
No,
No way. Like,
no.
no one is
He
even going to come close to paying him that much.
he would opt in today if he could.
I'm
So,
sure if he could sign the paperwork,
so,
so
so
like
there, so there,
they
so
saved
there,
a
they're
whole
banking,
year.
they're banking on the picks being valuable, and that they can make other moves to start reshaping the roster in the way they want to. But yeah, they're gonna need Paul George. Look, and Paul George was very good in stretches last season. First round series, he was good. So the issue with Paul George is keeping him on the court at age 36. But to make this work in the short term, they're gonna need Paul George to be effective and to be on the court for 60 plus games. And that's gonna be step one. But at, a press conference like that, you're not going to get all the answers you want, but I was heartened to see that it happened, and I thought, all my Boston colleagues in the room, they were asking the right stuff. Gary Washburn, who he and I have worked together forever, Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. I mean, he asked the Celtics how worried they are that, their reputation has been damaged to some degree by shipping out Jaylen Brown, the finals MVP 2 years ago, in this manner. Now, you don't expect the team to say, "Yeah, you're right. We've damaged our reputation here." But just the fact that the question is lodged, I mean, that does at least put it on the table.
I really enjoyed the conversation that you did with Adam Aries from the All NBA pod. And you guys were talking about how Jaylen Brown will be the most like motivated player this year to kind of show, hey, like you threw the baby out with the bathwater. And it got me thinking about like the top five guys who are under the most pressure going into the next season, because I think you've got way more than Jaylen Brown. I know you guys weren't thinking about it that way. It was just sort of like an offhanded comment, but it got me thinking about it. Like, how would you rank these guys? I've got six for you.
Okay.
Couldn't make it a top five. So Jaylen Brown is one. I'll agree with you. I think he's going to be motivated. Ja Morant, Giannis, Wemby, for a totally different reason, because they, just lost the finals. Let's go back to Chet Holmgren, who was barbecue chicken in the Western Conference final. I mean, people are like, how can he show his face again after what happened to him on the court? And then Brad Stevens, you know, even though he's a two-time executive of the year and he's got such a great reputation as being this team builder, he's probably got to be feeling the pressure like, you know, what's next? Like, how do I make this make sense to the fan base? So I don't know if I missed anybody. Maybe you put Luka on there. I don't know if his
it's a good list. I mean, I have not gotten to my look ahead to next season point of the summer yet. But that you've given me a head start now. But I mean, there's no question. I mean, the way the season ended for Wemby, you know, I'm sure at some point we will get some sort of update on what he's doing this summer to try to atone for that. Chet Holmgren, the Thunder, we knew, like, if you cover this league and you study the Thunder, you knew they were going to stand behind him. They were not just going to say, Chet Holmgren, we're trading you. Like, that is just not the Thunder way. Now, you would also have to say Chet Holmgren has a very sizable contract. So, I mean, that theoretically could have complicated it. But the fact that the Thunder are backing him and, you know, he was a piece of their championship team. So that's not really a surprise. But yeah, I mean, Jaylen Brown, I think, is just going to be so, because it's not, I mean, not just being traded, but Philly. Like, we always talk about the Celtics-Lakers rivalry, and that is one of the greatest rivalries in sports, but the Celtics and the Sixers have their own steel cage rivalry. Like, they have been battling in the Atlantic Division since I was a kid. Like, it is a, you know, it's a geographical rivalry. Like, there is, so like, for Jaylen Brown to be sent to Philly, like, Brad Stevens even mentioned this, you know, the exhibition schedule hasn't even come out yet, but Brad Stevens said they have two exhibition games. So they're meeting six times next season before we even get to the playoffs. So I think Jaylen, whatever, however you want to round out your top five, Jaylen Brown is going to be number one on that list. And those are the kind of things that make the NBA delicious.
Listen, I knew the Sixers had to do it. Obviously, this was like a gift that dropped right in their lap, you know, to get off of either Embiid or Paul George, to get off their contracts, plus what you got in return. I mean, this is like just a gift from the gods, right? From the basketball gods. But, you know, Philadelphia with expectations can sometimes be a challenging and tricky place to play. Obviously, Jaylen Brown knows this because Boston can be the same way. And I think there's a lot of similarity between the vibe in Boston, the vibe in Philly. When things are going great, it's great. When things are going bad, it is awful. But Philadelphia now, with these expectations, can they live up to them? Are they an Eastern Conference Finals team? Are they a finals team?
Yeah, I think they're a contender, no question. Look, whether, you know, if they get LeBron, obviously, we'd have to have a different conversation because now they're really going for it. But just adding Jaylen Brown to that electric backcourt, and now Embiid, because Embiid can still bring it, but only on occasion. So to not have to lean on him so heavy, like, yeah, I think the Knicks are the clear favorites in the East after what they just did. They deserve it. We expect Indiana to come back, but there are openings for teams to move up that ladder. And I mean, Edgecombe was so good as a rookie. Maxey is an established all-star now. Like, they have to be a contender to me. I mean, Jaylen Brown is a tremendous two-way player.
Last one. I know you've been watching the World Cup. I'm curious if you have a basketball comp for Christian Pulisic.
I actually feel like, I mean, he has been getting hammered for this. And what really grabs your attention is that it's people like Landon Donovan and Carly Lloyd, who are the great, you know, some of the greatest players that this country has ever produced. When they say it, it really gets your attention because they just have so much more credibility than anybody who could be levying the criticism. I mean, it's actually been, you know, as a lifelong soccer fan, I covered the 94 World Cup. I feel like the team performance overall was so subpar against Belgium that I haven't wanted to put it all on Pulisic. And actually, my kind of rant as a longtime watcher of the game, the U.S. defense was a mess in that game, and we knew it was vulnerable, and it was exposed that way. But goalkeeping error was a big part of it. And just before I was an NBA writer, I was a soccer writer in this country, which there weren't very many of us because there was no MLS. The sport barely existed in this country. But coming out of college as a young soccer writer, all I remember so vividly trying to keep track of all the American goalkeepers who were playing abroad. Goalkeeper is the one position that we have historically been able to produce elite talent repeatedly. And this is even before the Brad Friedels and the Tim Howards and the Brad Guzans. And like, so that goalkeeper has now become a position of question and weakness for the United States. That really bugs me and baffles me because, again, like Casey Keller was playing high level soccer in England in the early 90s. Like that's our like we're a goalkeeper nation. We should always have a top flight goalkeeper, and we didn't. So my personal focus has been more there. But hey, it's Charles Barkley always says, the stars get the credit, the stars get the blame, and Pulisic is the face of this team, the star of this team. And so everyone is, piling on right now. But I mean, yeah, just a very, very, very disappointing and distressing end to what until then was just, I mean, it was great. It was just great to see the way this whole country just was into it.
And I'll tell you what, it sparked a debate about youth sports in this country, which I think is long overdue. I don't know if anything's going to change. Kind of feels like the toothpaste is out of the tube with youth sports, but it has at least gotten that to the forefront of like, why are we all buying in, literally buying into the system that nobody likes, that nobody thinks works? You know, whether it's soccer, baseball, it doesn't matter. We're all literally spending thousands of dollars as parents on something that we all kind of despise. Anyway, Mark, thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me. Welcome to All City. I'm sure we'll do it again.
Very good.